The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at Lowe's.com/lowest price guarantee. Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
This is continuing coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
But still, you've got to imagine that the Alberts had to be stressed, what with that whole thing about a dead body being on their lawn. That might get some attention, and they had to be wondering, will he set up a crime scene? Is he going to come into the house? Is he going to search the house? Is he going to send in a forensics team? Is he going to interview witnesses? Is he going to take us to the station? Will he take our phones? Will he look at our communications? Will he look at our Google searches? Will he look at our early morning phone calls? Is he gonna look in the basement? And Michael Proctor answered every single one of those questions resoundingly. Nope. He's a Boston cop too. And with that, Michael Proctor didn't draw a thin blue line. He erected a tall blue wall. A wall that you can't scale. A wall that Karen Reed certainly couldn't get over. A wall between us and them. A place you folks are not invited. We protect our own. It's us or it's them. And by the way, who's she after all? Nobody. An outsider. This is gonna be easy. Or so they thought. Let's look at what Michael Proctor actually did and did not do in this case. One of the consistent issues that's come up throughout this trial is how evidence always seems to be changing and evolving when in Michael Proctor's hands or somebody in his orbit. If it happens once, let's chalk it up to a mistake. Twice, it's starting to look a little bit like incompetence. If that happens every single time, it becomes intentional, which means it becomes corruption. The defense spent some time, we spent some time, discussing the toe time that Michael Proctor swore to in affidavits. There was a reason that we believed it was so important, and I want to talk about that for just a quick second. Because this was a concerted effort by Michael Proctor to falsify the time the car was seized so that no one would know that he actually had possession of the car before the first pieces of taillight were ever discovered at the scene. But he got caught. And when he did, the best he could come up with was it was a typo. Like a dozen times, a typo. You'll remember what that testimony was. The truth is that car was in Michael Proctor's possession from about 4:12 in the afternoon. He said it was 4:16 when he finally had to tell the truth or some version of the truth. Those first pieces of taillight were not found until after 5:45 p.m. That is the very fact that Michael Proctor was trying to hide by those falsified affidavits, saying he didn't seize the car until 5:30. But that wasn't Michael Proctor's only manipulation of the investigation. What about Brian Loughran? You met him. Michael Proctor did his level best to not just hide evidence, but to hide human beings from you and from us. Michael Proctor was informed that the plow drivers were out that night. There would be a witness, potentially along 34 Fairview, at the exact times in question. Even Michael Trotta expressly told Michael Proctor that 34 Fairview had in fact been plowed that morning, and by whom. Proctor not only did not interview Brian Loughran, he never disclosed his name in a single report. He hid it. This is a witness who was literally on 34 Fairview at the time in question where a body was found on the lawn. Wouldn't you want to get the truth from an eyewitness? Wouldn't you want to seek that out? Not if you're Michael Proctor, a close friend of the Alberts. If it were up to Proctor, you literally never would have heard of or from Brian Loughran. That's a scary prospect. I want to touch briefly on the additional physical evidence, or some additional physical evidence presented by the Commonwealth in this case. You'll recall Christina Hanley. She established to a scientific certainty that the glass on the bumper, which was told to you in opening statement, was going to have something to do with this case. The glass on the bumper was going to match that cocktail glass. She told you unequivocally, the glass on the bumper did not match the cocktail glass. They came from two different sources. The glass on the bumper has nothing to do with the cocktail glass. So that glass on the bumper had to get there somehow. It didn't get there by being broken from the cocktail glass. See the point? It had to get on the bumper somehow. It didn't jump up there by itself. And what's really interesting is that there was one piece on the bumper, one, only one, that matched something else in the case. It was a perfect match to a piece of glass that was supposedly found at the scene. Who do you think had possession of that matching glass? Michael Proctor. So the glass on the bumper had to be placed there, and the only person who had anything close to matching the pieces that had to be placed there is Michael Proctor. You do the math. That leads us to the magic hair. The Commonwealth spent a lot of time bringing in experts about mitochondrial DNA and maternal DNA lines and comparative analyses, and all that sounds really great and really sciencey, except for the fact that it just doesn't matter. Why? Because you would have to believe that that little hair, tiny, tiny little hair, barely perched on the side of that SUV survived nearly 75 miles of a raging blizzard outside. That would be a magic hair indeed. That magic hair means nothing. The DNA means nothing, and that's because the hair was from somewhere else. It certainly was not from a motor vehicle incident at 34 Fairview on January 29th. That hair was placed there. The DNA on the outside of the taillight housing also merits very little discussion. John's DNA would be expected to be found all over that SUV, inside, outside, the exterior, the interior. Everything he touched would have had his DNA on it. Here's what's actually important about that DNA. No DNA was found on the interior of that taillight, the taillight that they now claim crashed into his arm and shattered. No blood was found anywhere on that taillight or any taillight pieces, and no tissue was found anywhere on that taillight or any taillight pieces. But we're to believe that that taillight literally exploded on John's arm at 25 miles an hour with 1,000 pounds of pressure. We talked about the evidence doing very funny things when in Proctor's possession or the possession of somebody in his orbit. Now think about the videos that you saw. How many videos appear to be somehow manipulated or altered? Just about every single one of them. Look at the video of the sally port. Let's take that one for example, that grainy one. It's missing the exact time that would show the condition of the taillight when it was pulled in to the sally port. Pretty important time, wouldn't you think? Did someone not want you to see what the condition of the taillight was at that exact time? But the good news is there's a second video. It's much clearer. and it's from the same time frame. We didn't get that one for about 2.5 years into the investigation. Literally, it was after the trial started that that one was turned over. And this is important. The Commonwealth introduced you to a person by the name of Yuri Bukenik. They presented video showing what was clearly the right side of the car. They asked questions about the right side of the car. You'll recall, Mr. Lally asked Sergeant Bukenik, did you or Trooper Proctor ever go at or near the right side of that taillight? And while he was asking the question, what appeared to be the right side of the car was looking at you. The video was still up. Bukenik paused, turned earnestly into the microphone, stared at you and said, never. We never went anywhere around that taillight. While he was showing you the right side of the car. And that trick might have worked until we got up to cross-examine him. And only then, on the second day of his testimony, did he have to admit that the video was actually inverted. It was backward. And it was cleverly inverted at that. The timestamp had the proper orientation, which means that timestamp had to be removed, the video inverted, and the timestamp placed back on it. Which means that was done intentionally. That was not a mistake. And when caught in that obvious fabrication, Bukenik doubled down and said, it's exactly the same. You remember that back and forth. It's exactly the same, he said, as if we're stupid. Is it exactly the same, or is it exactly opposite? Ladies and gentlemen, you were lied to. There is no other way to say it. It's inexcusable. It's abhorrent. But it's also a paradigm of everything that the investigators have been willing to do in this case. Lie, obfuscate, manipulate, alter. And when they're caught, they just excuse it away. Doesn't matter. It's the same thing. What's the big deal? Just look the other way. And don't forget, Bukenik is Proctor's supervisor. And he was in that little group chat where Karen Reed's naked photos were being searched for. You know the saying about the apple falling from the tree. Ladies and gentlemen, we haven't even started talking about the taillight yet. You'll recall that at the very beginning of this case, you were introduced to no fewer than 5 CPD officers very early on who searched the scene. None of them, not a single one, found any taillight material at the scene. Zero. Stephen Seriff, Sean Good, Stephen Mullaney, Michael Lank, Paul Gallagher, they were all there. They were all walking right around there. They were all looking. They were searching with their eyes. They were searching with their hands. Some said they were searching with their feet. They even used tools, a leaf blower. Not one piece of bright red taillight material was at the scene. Not a single piece. But incredibly, over the course of the next 3 weeks, according to Michael Proctor, 47 pieces of taillight material would end up being found, some of which were the size of a salad plate. The CERT team shows up later on January 29th, and according to O'Hara, the first few pieces of taillight were found about 5:45. And here's some interesting testimony that you heard. Who else was there? Who did O'Hara say was there? Well, he said his team was there. We certainly expected that, but then he said there were others. These other mysterious figures, some from Canton PD, some from the Massachusetts State Police, that he could not account for. Heavy coats, big masks, hats. Even Lieutenant O'Hara could not tell who was who, but he did note Canton police officers were there who were unaccounted for. Massachusetts State Troopers were there unaccounted for. And during that search that was overseen by Trooper Tully, Proctor's supervisor, 3 pieces of taillight material were found. That's super important, and I want to concentrate on that for a second. O'Hara said all 3 pieces were in an area about 12 inches square. That's an area about as big as your dinner plate. Tully, however, claimed that one red piece was found about 3 feet away from that was a shoe. About 1 to 2 feet from that was a clear piece of plastic, and a few feet away from that was a red piece of plastic. So we have red, clear, and red over the span of about, added up, probably 10 or 12 feet. Ladies and gentlemen, both of those things cannot be true. Somebody is taking liberties with the facts. Then Lieutenant Tully comes to court and makes this big grand gesture of opening all these evidence bags. These two evidence bags in particular represent exactly what we're talking about, those three pieces, red, clear, red. They're marked, they're sealed, they look official. They're not Stop and Shop bags, thank God. At least they've moved up from that. They've even got evidence tape on them. Who knew? There's evidence tape around here. So this must be real evidence, right? It must be real evidence in this case. And after making that big theatrical display, he opens up the bag with the red pieces and he pulls two pieces out. That's okay. Put the two red pieces together. Good so far. Then he opens up the second bag under Mr. Lally's questioning. And you remember he hesitated just a second. Opened that bag and pulled out one piece of clear plastic. Then pulled out a second piece of clear plastic with no explanation as to how that could have possibly happened. And he quickly returned all four of those back into the bag, sealed them up, and we're done for the day. The next day, I asked about that evidence again. I asked him to open up that bag with the red pieces, and he did the same thing. Pulled out two red pieces of plastic. And I said, you'll recall this, I said, look deeper. Look closer, sir. Pull everything out of that bag. Would he have, had I not suggested it? And then he pulled a third piece of red plastic out of the bag. So miraculously, Trooper Tully's three pieces of plastic became five pieces of plastic right before your eyes. Ladies and gentlemen, the forces at play that multiplied those pieces of plastic inside those evidence bags are the same forces at play that multiplied the pieces of plastic at 34 Fairview. Think about that. Let that sink in for a second. How easy is it? That's not sloppiness. That's evidence manipulation. That's how, over the course of 3 weeks, those pieces of plastic go from 0 to 3 to 5 to 47. Ever increasing in size with every single search. Now, knowing all that, ask yourself the looming question, who had access to that taillight, the cracked taillight? Who was it? Go back and watch the Sallyport video. I'll give you the timestamp, 5:37. And see it for yourself. We know that Trooper Proctor, with binder in hand, walked by himself. Once we corrected the video from being inverted, you can see that he walked back by himself to the right rear taillight where nobody could see what he was doing. Higgins' own key swipes put him in the Sallyport that same afternoon and evening. And then the Sallyport video magically skips and Chief Berkowitz appears right next to Proctor at the back of that vehicle in the same spot, and they walk out of the Sallyport together. Where were they going? Remember O'Hara, unidentified troopers in Canton Cops were at the CERT search at 34 Fairview. How hard is it to drop a piece of plastic? We spent a long time talking about the compromised and altered and tampered and manipulated evidence, and I want to switch and talk a little bit about the true facts in this case, because you did hear some true evidence and true facts. The Commonwealth presented about 67, maybe more, witnesses, and expended 30 plus days of trial and 9 weeks of your life. Maybe we're in the 10th week. For what? It should be relatively simple, right? The Commonwealth claims that Karen Reed pulled up to 34 Fairview, John got out of the car, she reversed into him and hit him, and then she drove home. That's four facts. It's just four facts, that's all it is. What evidence do they actually have to prove that that SUV ever hit John? The answer is none. They don't have any. There's no evidence whatsoever that Karen Reed's vehicle ever struck John O'Keefe or that Karen Reed ever wanted to strike John O'Keefe. In fact, every single piece of material evidence in this case unequivocally proves the opposite. John went into that house. That SUV was not damaged by hitting John, and John's injuries did not come from being hit by a car. That's what the evidence actually shows. The Commonwealth knows that, and they've known it for a long time, and Proctor knows that. And because of that, the Commonwealth just resorts to character assassination and talking for weeks on end about the snow. Let's talk about what the real evidence actually shows, the unassailable science. Let's talk about the truth. Concerning John's injuries first, the Commonwealth's own medical examiner, Dr. Scordibello, could not conclude that John was hit by a car. Think about that. And she would not even say that it was a homicide. She told you without any dispute in this case, quote, evidence pointing toward one manner of death is no more compelling than evidence of a competing manner of death, end quote. her words, not mine. She went on to say it's just as likely that he was punched and fell backward. His injuries are consistent with that. In fact, in her expert opinion, his injuries are consistent with a physical altercation, as she testified, but they are not, in her words, not classical injuries from an auto pedestrian accident. That by itself is reasonable doubt. But the evidence and the truth goes far further. We introduced you to not one, but two thoroughly credentialed medical examiners, or medical experts, Dr. Sheridan and Dr. Russell, both of whom said John's arm injury is consistent with an animal attack. Dr. Russell studied, diagnosed, and treated up to a thousand animal wounds. She's an expert in animal wounds, and she was unequivocal. Those wounds are from an animal, likely a large dog, which means that John was attacked inside the home where Chloe was. There is no other possibility. And Dr. Sheridan, for his part, with 13,000 autopsies under his belt, decades of experience as the chief medical examiner who's triple credentialed in anatomical, forensic, and neuropathology, he told you that John's injuries are inconsistent with a motor vehicle accident or incident. They're consistent, however, with a physical altercation. In layman's terms, the science proves John was beaten. That also is reasonable doubt and should end this case. But the facts and evidence don't stop there. Two of the most highly educated and highly qualified engineers you'll ever meet, Dr. Dan Wolf and Dr. Andrew Rentschler, mechanical engineer and a biomechanist. They reviewed this case. They did testing, they did analysis, they evaluated the case scientifically. They were not hired by the defense, not by the Commonwealth. They're completely 100% independent of any party in this case. And they were equally available, by the way, to the Commonwealth. They could have called them. They explained that John's injuries were not caused by being hit by Ms. Reed's SUV, and that the SUV was not damaged by coming in contact with John O'Keefe's body. That should end the inquiry right there. Both sides of the equation. From a physics, engineering, and biomechanical standpoint, they established that John O'Keefe was not struck by Karen Reed's vehicle, period. And that is yet another fact that establishes reasonable doubt and should put an end to this case. So instead of calling the ARCA experts, which they had available to them, the Commonwealth chose to introduce you to Trooper Joe Paul. You'll remember his testimony. I think I'm being kind when I say that Trooper Paul's analysis lacked credibility. Trooper Paul lacks the experience, the education, the training, the background, and the knowledge to not only render opinions on these issues, but to even understand the issues themselves. He makes the absurd claim that John was hit on the elbow area of his arm by a taillight, he was spun to the left in a pirouette, his arm stayed on the light long enough for the shards of plastic to explode around him, scratching his arm even though he was wearing long sleeves, then projecting him 30 feet to the left, but not before making a stop to hit his head on either the curb or the pavement before coming to his final resting place with his unbroken phone tucked neatly under his body. It's nonsensical. It borders on laughable. Compare that testimony to Dr. Dan Wolf and Dr. Andrew Rentschler. Both PhDs in engineering, both top of their field in accident reconstruction, both published peer review articles on the issues. Both men are highly sought after by the likes of national sports leagues and the United States Department of Defense. And these men are unrivaled in accident reconstruction. What did Dr. Rentschler say before he left the stand? This was even under cross-examination. He said that the physics and the science don't lie. His words were, you can't deny the science and the physics. John wasn't hit by that car, period. The Commonwealth cannot explain John O'Keefe's injuries. They can't explain his head wound. How did he get the head wound if he landed on snow-covered grass and dirt? And by the way, before Mr. Lally gets up and says it, because I know he's going to, there is zero evidence before you, zero, that cold grass and dirt turns into ice or turns into concrete. Zero. They can't explain the injury above his right eye, that laceration. They can't explain his nose. They haven't even tried to. They can't explain the injury to his tongue, the laceration on his tongue. They cannot explain the injuries to his to the back of his hands, the bruises, and certainly they cannot explain the injuries to his right arm. But maybe most importantly, they cannot and haven't even tried to explain the lack of injuries on John's body from the neck down. Nothing. He was pristine. Not a bump, not a bruise, not a fracture, not a broken bone. Nothing to suggest that he was hit by a 7,000-pound SUV going 25 miles per hour. And what of that right arm? According to the Commonwealth's best and brightest, Trooper Paul, John absorbed the entirety of the collision, the whole collision, with that 3.5-ton SUV entirely with his right arm, launching him some 30 feet. But amazingly, the arm suffered no break, no fracture, and didn't even get a bruise. So how are those injuries properly explained? The evidence is simple. John got into an altercation. He was punched. He tried to defend himself by putting his hands up. He may have even scratched his own nose by putting his hands in front of his face to defend himself. His hands were bruised and covering up.
Five minutes, Mr. Jackson.
Thank you, Your Honor. As he continued, he got hit, punch went through, and he fell to the ground, fracturing his skull. At some point during that altercation, the dog got a hold of him, and the dog was pulled away. Every single injury is answered. Every single injury is explained by that. Ladies and gentlemen, given what we know about the facts and the physical evidence in this case, the actual truth in this case, how did this happen? How did we end up here? We ended up here because of relationships, insider trading, playing the who you know game, and building a tall blue wall, which takes decades and generations. But the real question is it going to continue? Will this festering malignancy that allows a lead detective and his supervisor to gloat and sneer while looking over naked pictures or looking for naked pictures of the woman that they've targeted, will that continue? And the answer should be, not if you have anything to say about it. Michael Proctor is the lead investigator in this case, and much as the Commonwealth might try, they cannot distance themselves from the stench of him on this case and this investigation. Those secret group chats illustrate the quality and character of his investigation. Remind yourself how an, quote, unbiased and an objective investigator, someone who's supposed to be looking for facts. Ask yourself, how did he approach his job late at night, sitting there in his office, deviously looking for naked pictures of Karen Reed and talking about her like she's a piece of meat, talking about her bodily functions, her medical conditions, calling her vile names. I don't even have it in me to repeat what he said about her. He reduced her to an object. And he went further by insulting her. He went further than insulting her, and he dehumanized her. And when he was done betraying that very humanity, he wished for her to commit suicide. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how you frame someone. That's how you dehumanize someone so viciously that you can just pin it on the girl and cover for the homeowner because he's a Boston cop. That's how you rip a person's life apart and sleep like a baby while doing it. And then further that by saying, I hope she kills herself. Ladies and gentlemen, I just began the discussion this afternoon or this morning with a quote about the truth, and I did that because that's what this case is about, top to bottom, tip to tail. It's about the truth, not hiding it or concealing it, but exposing the truth. The truth is immutable. It's not a feeling, it's not a whim. It's unflinching, it's unchanging, and it's everlasting. That's why the law is steady. That's why it's not captive to the whims of people drunk with power who think they're above the law, who think they're above scrutiny. That's why you stand as the guardian of justice and the protector of justice. The law demands the very integrity that Trooper Proctor and his investigation lacks, and it requires that you cannot convict Karen Reed unless the Commonwealth has met its incredibly high burden to prove every element beyond a reasonable doubt and to a moral certainty. And a moral certainty is defined as the highest degree of certainty possible in matters related to human affairs. It's the highest degree possible in your life. That's the level of certainty. And I'll leave you with this. You have the most powerful tool known to American jurisprudence because you have your vote. No one can take that away from you, not me, not the Commonwealth, not the court. You may not have asked to be here, but each of you have given something very special of yourselves. You've agreed to do that, which is the highest calling a citizen can answer in any way. You've agreed to give your community your best. And my question to you is, what will you do with this moment? Ignore the lies and the manipulations, the misogyny, the bias, the lack of evidence. Could you ever do that? Would you ever do that? Or will you say with your verdict, I see the truth and I will not ever look the other way? When you stare the truth down, you'll see that the Commonwealth has not proven its case beyond a reasonable doubt into a moral certainty, not even close. Ladies and gentlemen, Karen Reed is innocent. Do justice and find her not guilty. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Jackson. All right, Mr. Lally.
More raw courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed is coming up from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Press subscribe so you don't miss a minute.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong. The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.